This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
I want to be a believer. I want to be positive. I want to be able to give everybody this like happy news that college football is going to be just fine. But man, after yesterday, it's getting tougher and tougher to think that college football is going to be anything like what we've seen in the past, if at all, coming into the fall. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike, sitting with Mike Golic Jr., represented by Progressive Insurance. All guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And Mike, you know me, usually I'm like skipping on in. It's Thigh Day. I'm excited to work with you on Thigh Day Friday. And, you know,
I'm a little disturbed by the length of shorts you wore in today, but that's a whole separate discussion.
We'll get there. I'm coming. Usually I would be the guy that's coming in and ready to socially distance, elbow bump, and hug and have a great Friday. I'm scared. I'm nervous. For the first time, I can actually say at this point, I'm sitting here and I'm imagining the Warner Brothers cartoon where you just see the little white flag come up and just start waving around. That's what it feels like happens after the Big Ten became the first conference yesterday to announce that they're eliminating non-conference games. It should be noted that they are keeping their conference schedule, at least for now. That hasn't been affected, but they will be eliminating any non-conference games. Reports are that the ACC will be soon to follow. So we're seeing conferences start to just chunk out games, and it makes me nervous that we're not going to see college football at all.
This is what people on the internet would lump into the further overarching umbrella that is the big sad. 2020 has been ripe with the big sad in a lot of this one, because it's the totality of this week in college football. It is the Ivy League making their decision. It's Stanford starting to cut teams in a way that you know is going to start happening at others soon. And then you're right, the Big Ten being the first domino to fall in this one, because we had talked about and flirted with this idea and heard of it, but with a conference with the backing and history and power of the Big Ten to come out and do this, like hearing Gene Smith, Ohio State's athletic director, who holds as important a position in college football as anyone, come out and talk like this about fall sports is concerning.
I am very concerned. I think in our last conversation, I was, cautiously optimistic. I'm not even there now. So I am concerned that we may not be able to play, which is why we took the measure that we took in order to try and have September available to us for conference games. And give us the flexibility and control to handle disruptions if we're able to start a season. We just didn't respond to our opportunities that were provided to us. People need to follow the protocols and give our kids a chance to compete.
The way he says if in there, if we're able to have a season, I mean, that sort of it has such a doomsday tone. And look, we got to be clear. We've only lost a few games, so it's still salvageable, right? We've lost some great games, but we've only lost a few games so far into this process with the Big Ten announcement.
Yeah, most teams play 8 or 9 conference games, depending on the conference. I mean, so you look at this and you can say, yeah, you've only lost a couple of games in all this one, but in general, it's again parts we're putting together. Plot lines now that are going to start to form a trend in here. And that's why I said with the backdrop of the Ivy decision, with the backdrop of Stanford's decision, the SEC came out and was the one that was sort of the outlier yesterday. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, came out and said, we'll continue to meet regularly with our campus leaders in the coming weeks, guided by medical advisors, to make important decisions necessary to determine the best path forward related to all SEC fall sports. We recognize the challenges ahead and know the well-being of our student-athletes, coaches, and staff and fans must remain at the forefront of those decisions. So they have put this off a little longer, but we expect to hear it from everybody else. And this seems like a situation, the more and more you listen and talk to people, it sounds like we expect it to get a little uglier. And then the prospect of a spring season, and these things are all things I'm starting to mentally prepare myself for in a way that I wasn't sure the case was going to be a month ago.
Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike. We're sitting with Mike Golic Jr. Some of the games that we won't have now: Michigan at Washington, Ohio State at Oregon, which was going to be one of the big landmark early season games, Penn State, Virginia Tech, and one that hits your heart, Notre Dame versus Wisconsin, which was those are big opportunities for both schools in the constant playoff conversation to show it against another big brand. So not a matchup we're used to getting either. So
no,
bummer to see that go away.
And that was one of the things that in the college football playoff era we had talked about maybe becoming more in vogue, thankfully, which is these big-time out-of-conference matchups. This one wasn't a home-and-home. It was going to be played Wisconsin's home game at Lambeau Field, Notre Dame's home game at Soldier Field instead of at Camp Randall and Notre Dame Stadium. But still, like a great out-of-conference matchup, right, could have those implications just in general for the health of college football and college athletics, big-time out-of-conference matchups. I did enjoy, by the way, and I have to almost have my after-you-know-what cigarette on this one, watching the collective internet thrash about and try and act like Notre Dame would be left out of whatever picture come forward. I mean, you know what? I applaud you guys, and again, in these dark times, find your joy wherever it is. And if we can supply your joy, if you can sit up here and think, well, is Notre Dame just going to play BYU and Army and all this one? I saw people putting up Chicago area high school schedules and throwing Notre Dame in on it. Like, that's cute, man. Get the jokes off. Like, good for all you guys. I know that you need this right now. I love this for you. So enjoy that. Have at it. This is great. You're doing great. You're all doing great. Right after John Swofford and the ACC came out almost immediately and said, if Notre Dame needs games, we got them.
And that's the most important part of this. Like, Notre Dame's not going to be for that portion of the conversation. Notre Dame wouldn't be left out. They already had 6 ACC games scheduled. The presumption is that if at this point, they'll find a way to bolster the rest of their schedule with ACC games should they want to.
So. And that's worth noting, because the Pac-12 and a decision that could be made there soon is going to affect Notre Dame. They obviously play teams like Southern Cal, Stanford. They tend to have a Pac-12 portion of their schedule every year that now, in addition to losing Big Ten teams like we talked about, losing that would create a need for that. And with the contractual tie-in they already have with the ACC for other sports, it's a natural fit in all this, because this is a reminder that this decision for the conferences to operate as sole entities in this going forward is less about this idea of geography. Like, you look at the footprint of the Big Ten, and it's insane, like the geography and the mileage that it spans in all this one. And this would kind of be lumped into that with the ACC, because Notre Dame much more in, you know, general Big Ten country. This is about the conferences being able to operate more nimbly, to be able to make decisions for the most important part of there. Because as we saw yesterday with the NCAA's comic press release there, we have no true leadership in college football, because their response is to basically hold the football for a second and punt it right back into the hands of the people that actually run this sport. It's a joke.
Paul Feinbaum from the Paul Feinbaum Show was on First Take yesterday, talked about the lack of leadership in college football.
The biggest challenge college football has right now, in addition to fighting the virus, is that nobody's in charge. I don't think this is the first time we've mentioned this, but it's really the problem in every other sport that has been mentioned. There's a commissioner. There are people that understand the nuances. And in college football, we have 5 commissioners of the Power 5 leagues who are trying to figure it out, but the NCAA does not necessarily have a vote here. They can offer some guidance, and they really haven't offered very much at that. So it is a mess.
Yeah, the NCAA, remember when you were in those like big lecture classes and you had to take a test and the real smart kids in class would offer to help pass out the Scantrons? They're trying to help everybody out. That's the NCAA. Like, you're smart and you know the material and you're good at handing stuff out, but when we put you in front of the class and ask you to teach, you crap down your leg. Like, that's what goes on in this situation. No semblance of, we are led again. This is like what we talked about in the spring. And I said, you have every other league sending their commissioner out there to go ahead and, you know, put out some statement and put out some semblance of guidance about what's going to happen. And then the NCAA sends out the blue screen with, as COVID-19 pandemic continues to impact college sports nationally, the NCAA supports its members as they make important decisions based on their specific circumstances and in the best interest of the college athletes' health and well-being. Thank you, blue screen, triumphant leader in this situation. It just underscores, and bashing the NCAA is easy, and I just kind of needed to do it there for a second. It underscores the need for the Power 5 to do what we've been talking about. Break away, figure out a leader for that group, the Autonomy 5, whatever you want to call it. Figure out a central leader for that group so that when we get in these situations, you can operate with a little more togetherness and all this, be a little more coordinated, understand and pool the resources that you've all got collectively, and make a decision that's best for the health of the sport. Because now what we've got is a bunch of people that are working together behind the scenes. We hear the conference commissioners are on calls all the times, but there's still not a tie that binds. There's still not someone that they can sit up there and understand and count on in these moments, especially as you deliver your message to the public in a way that's a little less helter-skelter. So it just underscores what a dated model the NCAA is.
And you say that the conferences are working together, but several reports yesterday noted that the SEC was upset that the Big Ten made this decision so early. It is realistically the wild, wild west in college football at this point, and nobody's talking to anybody in a way that gets anything done in the smart way.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
The Big Ten yesterday announced the cancellation of non-conference college football games. The ACC expected to make the same announcement, and we're looking at the dominoes fall left to right. It's sort of a sad day here for two of us that love the sport so much on Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all of our phone guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Speaking of which, let's go right to a guest, Mike. We need to get some expertise here. So we're joined now by Paul Feinbaum of the Paul Feinbaum Show. Paul, I'll just ask you directly, do you think we're going to have college football this fall?
I don't. I keep reading comments from athletic directors about games. I saw the AD at Alabama today say, the game with Southern Cal, we're still planning on it. I mean, why are they trying to kid us? The college football season is slipping away by the hour. I mean, what's happening in college football right now is essentially a game of 1,000 cuts. This is a death by 1,000 cuts. I mean, what are we talking about here any longer? I've lost track, and it's a game of dueling statements. You have conference after conference putting out boilerplate statements. So the worst being the one by the NCAA last night. I mean you could get a third grader in Madison, Wisconsin, and have come up with a more cogent, intellectual message about where we are in college athletics than the one that the NCAA, the governing body of this sport, put out last night. And by putting that statement out there, they were essentially saying, we have no earthly idea what's going on. We don't have any control over it. It is the wild, wild west. So have at it. We can still disseminate some meaningless statements, but we have no more control than that.
Paul, and I guess to that end, like, does all of this, and we had these conversations earlier during the quarantine period, but especially with the major decisions being made now on the other side of what we hope is a season at some point, would you imagine there's maybe a renewed fervor for that idea of the Autonomy 5 conferences sort of banding together? Because this, you're right, is sort of a laughable show of just how outdated the model for the NCAA is.
The NCAA is dead. It's been proven every day of the week. And what we saw last night, what we've seen under the leadership of Mark Emmert since the beginning of this is comical. He's really done one thing correctly. He canceled the NCAA basketball season, and that was after everyone else had already moved. I mean, how tough was that, considering Adam Silver had pulled the plug the night before in about 5 minutes, and Mark Emmert still convening the August Board of Governors to discuss what they need to be doing. And quite frankly, it's embarrassing. And, the conversation about the czar of football has been going on most of your guys' lifetime. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I think the five commissioners have done most of the heavy lifting during this process. You saw that break down a little bit yesterday with Kevin Warren of the Big Ten being the first one out. But the reaction yesterday was interesting. All over the sports world, all over the Twitter sphere, people are going, man, I can't believe this. Guys, nothing about college football should be surprising to anyone right now. The fact that we're still even talking about the season is hopeful to me, and I don't know how much longer that's going to last, back to the original question here. But, I mean, this is just a water torture drill, drip by drip, that every week, commissioners meet in a panic mode and say, okay, what are we going to do now? What they're going to do now is simply wait and watch the country, of which they have absolutely no control over. And, you don't need me or Junior or Fitz to say, the country's going in the wrong direction for whatever reason. That's not up to us. That's already been determined.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum of the Paul Feinbaum Show. So, Paul, is there any momentum in your mind to a spring season if fall can't happen?
Yes, and for this reason, Fitz, because nobody wants to stand up here on, pick the day, July 31st, and say, we are canceling the college football season. We'll see you again next summer. I mean, that's a devastating blow. So, these guys have to be relevant. I mean, don't forget, these commissioners have I mean, you saw the statements yesterday that football wasn't high up. I mean, they talked about the fall sports calendar, and then they issued all the sports on the fall sports calendar, whatever they are, other than college football. And they just can't say we're done. So they have to say we will continue to monitor this. We will continue to have Zoom meetings every morning at 7 a.m. so we can earn our $3 or $4 million a year as commissioners. And then we will evaluate the situation in consultation with the NCAA. Yeah, I mean, on and on and on. And then at some point they'll decide we're going to explore the possibility of spring football. It keeps hope alive. It keeps everyone focused. It stops people from just being devastated by the inevitability of what is going on right now. So I think there's a reasonable chance that we will have spring football. But nobody can make that decision right now.
Paul, I'm going to ask you probably the most important question in all of this. It was one that was coming up a lot yesterday. Do you think this finally gets Notre Dame to join a conference?
I'm not sure. Notre Dame has the best of all worlds yesterday. I had somebody text me yesterday and go, is Notre Dame out? And I'm like, no, Notre Dame's not out. And he said, well, they're not in a conference. I said, well, yes, they are. I mean, they play a million sports in the ACC. So, I mean, I think it's the best moment for the ACC to try to cajole Notre Dame into joining. But I don't think you can pressure Notre Dame. I think they have to figure out whether, football is better or not. I mean, it's a good thing that they made that deal years ago, or they would be scrambling right now. But I'm not sure Notre Dame's any closer today than they were yesterday.
Paul, I'm going to ask you not a doomsday question, but just I need real perspective. If there's no college football at all for this season, not fall, not spring, what happens to the game?
It's going to be hurt badly. And I think really the smart people in the game fits are already trying to figure out what's on the other side of this. I don't know any more than you do in terms of whether we'll have a college football season. I mean, I think anyone who believes strongly that we are going to see Alabama and Georgia on September 19th and all these other featured conference games, I'm all for having hope. Everyone has to border themselves on faith and hope. But the real questions are already having to be asked. I mean, what about those MAC schools yesterday? 11 games wiped out because of the Big Ten decision. Millions of dollars. I mean, athletic departments are being decimated. So the question really, must remain, what is this going to look like? And I think it's going to be an altered state. Even if we have spring football, you can't do what we normally do in the fall. And if we don't have spring football, it's going to look like the Stone Age in college football.
As always, great stuff. Check out the Paul Feinbaum Show. Paul, we appreciate you joining us this morning, my friend.
Guys, always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
Look, I'm used to not being the smartest guy in the room. That is part of my life.
You work with me a lot. I get it.
I understand it. You were an academic All-American, which is really what people that aren't great at football remind us that they did in their lives. But you did that, Mike. But spectacularly well. But I've never felt less qualified than I do right now to talk to our next guest, because not only was he better than you at football?
My God. All right, you know what? Now you're just getting mean, but not only, accurate, but mean.
Not only was he an incredible football player, but he's also smarter than all of us combined. Let's head over to the Shell Benzo Performance Line, where Dr. Myron Roll joins us. Former NFL defensive back, neurosurgery resident at Mass General. And look, first and foremost, Dr. Roll, because that's what I'm going to say here, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. And I'm really glad we get to talk to you, because as we are right now talking about coronavirus and whether or not a league should be playing, I mean, I'm getting blown up on social media saying this is all a farce and none of it's real and we're all buying into a scam. So I ask you, where should I be finding the right information so that I can be as educated on actual facts as possible?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it, certainly. And I'd say that accurate information can come from big hospital centers like ours, Mass General Hospital, Harvard, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Hopkins, some of these places that are just really devoted to the facts, devoted to scientists, epidemiologists, people in the lab doing wonderful research over and over again, and then also using the data points that we have from the patients that we're actually taking care of. That's a good starting place. WHO, CDC, they have some good guidelines as well, but being biased and seeing what we're seeing on the ground as a medical professional working in a really, really great hospital system, I think those are places where you can start to find out what you need to do to protect yourself, your family, and just where we are with coronavirus around the country.
And Myron, let's stick with where you are. We talked to you a while ago at the beginning of all this, especially when Massachusetts was dealing with some of the worst of this. So where are you guys at now, and what have you learned throughout this process in dealing with the coronavirus in the way that you guys have been?
Well, we're actually a bit better than we were when we started. And I think a lot of that is due to us taking it very seriously and really, really transforming our hospital. As you remember, when we started this coronavirus fight, we had really limited our surgical capacity. We were, declining or postponing some elective surgeries. We had transformed our hospital into a hospital within a hospital so that we were really devoted to just taking care of COVID-19 patients. No visitors were allowed. All essential workers were sort of staggered when they started their work day. We had an app. We walked into the hospital to show if you were sick or had any of the symptoms, the body aches, the sweating, the fever, anything like that that was related to coronavirus, and you'd be triaged appropriately. But now we're starting to open up a lot more. Surgeries are starting again. Our ICUs have been transformed back into their normal running ICUs. Our pediatric patients are not going to Boston Children's Hospital anymore, but they're back at Mass General Hospital. And our numbers are going down. I think our cases are less than 100, and I think our confirmed coronavirus patients are maybe less than 20, but our at-risk patients are maybe about 70 to 80. So it's getting better where we are, but obviously that's not representative of the whole country. As you see, places in the South below the Sun Bible Belt, it's just really, really difficult to see how these cases are still rising. And I think a lot of that is due to, just the urgency that some of these maybe local governments and people have for wanting to resume a sense of normalcy. We all want to get there. But as I mentioned in the past, we have to go low, go slow, be conservative, because this virus won't go anywhere unless we attack it in that two-pronged approach from medical professional side and then also from the normal citizenry side.
Let's go look at Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. We're talking to Myron Roll, former NFL defensive back, neurosurgery resident at Mass General. So, Myron, you mentioned sort of the different areas. You're so aware of what life, having played at Florida State and with the Titans, I mean, you know the South well, and they seem to be handling things differently there. So knowing how important college football is to that part of the country, if you were speaking right now to conferences across the country, would you recommend that college football be played given where we are right now with COVID-19?
I would say no. I would say it'd be irresponsible to play right now, especially with the numbers being as it is. And also, frankly, with how uncomfortable some of these athletes are with playing. They need to be your primary focus, right? I mean, if you have several players that are saying, I don't feel comfortable playing, I don't feel like this is the right move, I don't think that I want to see changes happening with our health and with the security that we have as far as the testing and, is this even possible or pragmatic to have a close contact sport, to be in a huddle, to tackle somebody, be in a locker room, to be in a weight room with your teammates and not contract the virus? I don't know how I'm going to respond to this virus. We've seen people who have comorbid and premorbid conditions that are older. Yes, they maybe decompensate quicker from coronavirus, but we have seen young people who have needed acute level critical care sort of treatment and therapy for this. I would say it's irresponsible to start right now. I think that taking a year or maybe even two is necessary to make sure that we have great data points, good statistical significance in all of our, articles or all of our research and data on what's happening, and making sure that we have the appropriate therapeutic regimen to fight this the right way. We have to be a little bit uncomfortable being, without sports for a while. And my absolute recommendation would be do not do it. Put the priority of health as a premium for the student athletes at the highest, and just listen to the facts and go with where this virus is going.
Myron Roll with us here on Golic and Wingo. A little bit of a different dynamic, certainly, as far as the power when it comes to the professional ranks. But Tom Haberstroh wrote a great piece recently about the NBA bubble and some of the moral questions about maybe the idea of taking testing away from the general public and some of the things going on with that. As you see the cases spiking in Florida and even around Orlando where the NBA bubble is that a concern that you would have as someone in the medical profession seeing the NBA and the resources it's drawing away from that local area?
I would, honestly. I think that, you know, the primary agenda right now, it seems, for these leagues is, you know, making money, resuming their normal, you know, schedule, and trying to put that product onto the court or the field or the track or the pool, wherever they are, but for the NBA specifically, onto the court. That's not right, in my opinion. I think that's not appropriate. I think that you should place a premium on these athletes, their families, themselves, and making sure that they're, you know, protected. If you care about them, if you say you do care about them, if you're walking in accordance with, you know, the civil rights and the social justice changes that, you know, you're seeing going on, where leagues are saying they're backing their athletes. They want to give athletes more of a voice. They you know, want to make sure the athletes are being optimized in all aspects of their person, on the court, off the court, with their family members, allowed to do whatever they want to do, as long as it's within, you know, the parameters of their profession. Then place this at a high level too. Obviously, I'm biased being a physician, but I think that, you know, instead of worrying about making money, instead of worrying about generating this sport, instead of worrying about, you know, getting people away from thinking about the coronavirus and onto their escape route, which could be sports. And we know that can be a utility of sports. I think we should really just go a lot slower and maybe protect our players a little bit more and, you know, get some more time for this coronavirus to really run its course and for us to have a good fight against it. Right now, we're obviously losing again, and we have to do better.
We're talking to Myron Roll. Myron, you've been doing incredible work on the front lines, which we're so thankful for, and we love the information you're giving us, but you've also been doing a lot with your foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about the Roll Foundation and what you guys been up to?
Yeah, so I started the Myron L. Roll Foundation in 2009. It was a way for me to sort of get you know, good social change into the world through an organized conduit like a foundation. I've had all these ideas of how to, you know, sort of make an impact. And when you're young at Florida State, or when you're young just in general, you have all these ideas, but there's no real way of getting it through. And when you've been blessed with a great family and, you know, great mentors, great coaches, at some point you want to turn the table and start providing good social change. You want to start giving out some of those things that you were taught, mentoring young people. And so we've done that through my foundation, and now we try to find this issue that has been at the forefront, which is reducing the risk of the spread of coronavirus, wearing masks, you know, adhering to proper behavior lifestyle modifications, washing your hands, social distancing, staying home if you can, having Zoom meetings as much as you can, you know, doing all these things away from people and away from crowds that will help curb the coronavirus. So my foundation has given out several masks, over 1,000, to at the Appalachian Center, which is a mental health group down in Tallahassee, Florida, where I went to college, and then to the Mattapan Teen Center. It's a subset of the Boys and Girls Club in Boston, Massachusetts, a group that I work with, that I plan to continue work with as I finish my residency up at Mass General Hospital.
We appreciate all the information. You guys can find out more at rollfoundation.org, rollfoundation.org. Myron, thank you so much for making us smarter and for all that you've been doing to help everybody and so many people that need your help right now. We genuinely appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant Jell-O mold. It's very interesting where that went.
There's something about the phrase Fight Island that just gives me goosebumps. And there's something about the way that UFC particularly has marketed Jorge Masvidal that makes me think that we're going to be on the precipice of seeing the next great marketing campaign, great star for the sport. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the show. Penzo Performance Line, Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic Jr. and Mike, Fight Island. I've said this repeatedly. I know Fight Island is actually going to be a controlled environment and a nice arena and everything's going to be fine. It feels, though, like I've got this Lord of the Flies imagery or like Mad Max or Gladiator or something like that. That's just the words Fight Island when you put this in. And then you add Jorge Masvidal, who has just become this marketing machine. And it feels like you've got this must-watch event for UFC 251 tomorrow, largely because I am a sucker for all things branding and marketing.
Yeah, no, I think hearing Fight Island conjures up the image of like a map from like a fight-based video game. It's like, all right, Mortal Kombat is taking place in some dungeon or on some beach and all this. But instead, we know we're getting a closed environment. But like you said, we know we're getting a great fight and someone that could potentially be that face. And we're delighted to be joined now by Daniel Cormier, our ESPN UFC analyst, obviously a great fighter for such a long time. And Daniel, we appreciate the time this morning. Is that what's at stake here? Is Jorge Masvidal the guy that might be the next best candidate for face of the sport?
I mean, he already is. He may be the face of the sport already. I was very excited about UFC 251. When it was Usman, Burns, and everybody else. And no disrespect to Gilbert Burns, but I'm a hardcore guy. I'm a UFC guy. I'm in the company. I'm a fan of fighting. But since he fell out and Horst now on his fight card, it has completely blown the roof off of the excitement around the whole sports world in regards to this fight. And I did not expect it to be this big. I did not expect such a massive reaction when he replaced Gilbert Burns. But, I mean, that just shows me that maybe even the people from the inside, we may have underestimated the ability to draw of Jorge Masvidal. It's massive. Everything he does, it's been turned into gold lately.
We're talking to ESPN UFC analyst Daniel Cormier. So Masvidal losing, as has been well documented recently, 20 pounds, and he's trying to do it incredibly quickly. So for all of us out of quarantine, I'm jealous of that. How do you just drop 20 pounds in a couple of days? But realistically, what impact will losing that kind of weight have for him in this fight?
It's not really like that odd to have to lose that much weight. The only difference is, usually you're preparing yourself for that big weight cut. I remember when I was fighting at 205, every time I left to Vegas, I was about 20 pounds overweight. So I think that most people are around that weight at the start of the week. So he knew he was fighting last week, so he started to get the weight down. And he's a longtime veteran, so I don't anticipate it's going to be that much of a problem because he's also going to have 30 hours to recover before he actually fights in the octagon. So he'll be fine, but, you know, back to what I was saying, he took a picture. He's flying over to Abu Dhabi the other day. His plane stops in Rome. They get pizza. He's not eating pizza, but he took a picture as if he's sitting on the private jet eating pizza, and it completely blew up. The whole sports world is talking about Jorge Masvidal eating pizza in Rome on his way to the title fight. It's a big deal, and it's a great fight. But I don't anticipate the weight's going to be that much of an issue for him.
DC, you mentioned that he gets 30 hours to recover. So when he actually hits the ring, about where is his weight typically going to be?
About the same, right? That's why it's good not to be too small. Because if he was 180 pounds naturally and he lost the last 10 pounds, all his body would allow him to do is get back up to 180. So this might be a blessing in disguise for Game Bread, because he needs to be bigger, because he's going to have to defend a lot of takedowns from Usman. He's going to have to be big enough to deal with the physicality of the champion. So he's going to be 190 pounds. If he was 190 on Sunday and he's 190 about naturally, the moment he hits that scale and he starts to drink and he starts to eat, boom, he'll put that 20 pounds back on in 6-7 hours.
So with his side of it well documented and the way he's coming at it, the weight that he's going to have to lose, on the other side, we've got Kamaru Usman, who's coming into this situation now preparing for a different fighter at the last moment. So what is the adjustment that you think's being made from his side to try and counteract that as best he can with that limited time?
you know, I talked to Kamaru Usman on Saturday when the fight was getting announced, and he was so excited about the ability or the opportunity to fight Jorge Masvidal because, you know, those guys have a lot of bad blood. He was supposed to be the original opponent, and he feels like this is a great matchup for him because of his ability to ground him, his ability to push a high pace, and just try to truly outman Jorge Masvidal. But easier said than done, but the champ was very confident in this matchup. And, you know, I believe that we looked at the odds, and Masvidal was about a 3-1 dog. And I understand that people would quickly think it's because of the short notice, but if they matched these guys up with 2 months ago, Masvidal would probably be about a 3-1 dog anyway. So this is a very difficult matchup for Masvidal, and I believe the champion knows that, but he's very focused on defending and keeping his championship. He is not taking game bread lightly in no means.
We're talking to Daniel Cormier, ESPN UFC analyst, Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike Golic, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. So, Dan, when you look across the board at what Fight Island means, I heard Dana White say it was important that they be international, that the brand wants to be international, mm-hmm. and this was of getting international fighters involved. So when you look at the growth of the sport that you're so passionate about, that you're involved with, that you love, how important in your mind was it that this international event be held?
This is a big deal, right? Because it was, you know, when you were talking about marketing, we were told Fight Island by Dana White, and then they gave us no detail. So then your imagination got to just run wild. Right. And then when he tells you it's Yaz Island, somewhere where the UFC's actually been before, it's in the controlled environment, as you said, it didn't change it because it allowed for you to just make up like these ideas, Mortal Kombat and video games and movies. You just thought about all these deals. But at the end of the day, this Fight Island was about the international fighters. This was about the guys that are all around the world that can't get into the United States. So it was massive. It was massive to get these guys opportunities to fight and make money during this pandemic. But it's a big deal. It was huge for those international fighters. And honestly, you got to think the UFC couldn't keep holding fights here because you run out of American fighters after a point, you know. So it's great. It's great to see. And it really is because Dana White is such a madman. He's able to put these ideas together and then make them come to fruition.
And to that end, Dana White was one of the first ones pushing to get the UFC back. Before any of the rest of the sports there, he wanted to start giving this back to his fans and really capitalize during this time period. And with some of that, we all worried about, all right, the risks that would be going along there. But we've seen, and it's been documented, the testing that's gone into each and every one of these fights. Overall, as you've talked to fighters, if you talk to people around the UFC, what's the response been internally from the job they've seen when it comes to testing and the safety protocols that go into all this?
Oh man, there's so many tests going on right now, and like with Gilbert Burns, right? He went to Vegas before he went to Abu Dhabi, and that's when he tested positive for the COVID. So it's like you went to Vegas if you're leaving the United States, you quarantined for a day while getting tested there. If you were good, you got on the charter flight out to Abu Dhabi, where right off the plane, you got tested again, went to your room for another 24-hour quarantine until you got your test back. Then you got tested again on the third day. Had to stay in quarantine one more day before you could go out. So three negative tests before they could have access to the hotel and the safe zone. I mean, Abu Dhabi has really stepped up, though. There's like a 10-mile radius out there that's called a safe zone. You can't go in or out unless you're a part of the UFC in this event. So they've taken the safety to a whole different level.
Talking to Daniel Cormier, ESPN UFC analyst. All right, so DC, make me the smartest guy in the room. When this fight starts, I want to be able to tell like my buddies on Zoom something that makes it seem like I know more than everybody else. So what are you looking for, like in the first couple of minutes of the fight? What are you looking for that I can steal as my great analysis?
I think what you have to do is this. Be like, guys, Usman's a wrestler. Remember what Masvidal did to Ben Askren? That's all you got to say. And then because it was such a – remember, Masvidal ran across the octagon, did that flying knee, got a 5-second knockout. You just got to tell him, watch for Masvidal to try to time Usman's shot and land one of those beautiful fights, ending shots like he did against Aspen. And if you say that, and even if Masvidal just kind of makes an action as if he's going to do it, or Usman seems hesitant, people will be like, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. So just tell him, hey, remember Usman's a wrestler, so watch for Masvidal to try to trick him with a big attack that could end the fight.
So now that you've made Jason sound like he's smart, we're going to rely on you because you actually are smart and know this very well, and ask, how do you see this going and playing out, and ultimately, who do you see taking this one home?
I love this fight, man. I love this fight. Dana White released a video today, the opening of the show. It is insane. It is just insane. It's a great fight. It's got all the things we want as fight fans. The bad blood, the bad intention, everything. It's got the star. It's not often do you see the challenger as the mainstream star and the champion, the guy that's going to get the rub after the fight. But with that all being said, Kamaru Usman is the champion for a reason. He's one of the greatest welterweights of all time. He's dominant. He's physical. He's tough. He's got great cardio. And I just believe that he is a matchup nightmare for Jorge Masvidal. And I think he'll get the job done. I don't know how, but I believe that he's just a little bit much for Masvidal.
As always, man, we appreciate you coming on. Stay safe. Can't wait for this weekend. ESPN UFC analyst Daniel Cormier, appreciate you, my friend.
Hey, thank you, boys. I appreciate it.
Man, I'm telling you, the way he and Ariel Helwani talk about UFC, if that doesn't get you jazzed for Fight Island with Masvidal, like all of these elements together have me more excited for a UFC event than I can remember.
It is so true, and I understand. Lack of sports, like overall, that we've got right now relative to what we're used to. But he's right. When this got announced, it is amazing the way that it automatically ramped up. And he's right. I think we learned a lot about the star power that Masvidal already commands. We're used to seeing him around here, certainly. So maybe there's some of that. He does so much with the Levitard Show guys down in Miami. You had Stu Gotts with the weigh-in with him at a prior fight and all this. But I think you're seeing, in general, a buzz around this fight that wouldn't have been there before that. We know people have been looking for a title fight for him, but it just seems like there's been another level to this that is going to probably help him when it comes to negotiating in the future with Dana White, with the UFC, in a way that held this up to begin with before Burns had to bow out.
Make no mistake about it. If Masvidal wins this title, he becomes sort of their new person. That he is the Hulk Hogan at that point. He's the Conor McGregor. He becomes the guy that they bridge everything around.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
This whole thing has been a dumpster fire.
That.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Bites.
This can't be happening.
What the hell?
Skies out, thighs out for everybody, and it's time to absolutely decimate the English language. We're stupid. It's that bites. It's, I think, slowly more from just sound bites from the week in sports that made us laugh to sound bites of us messing up during the course of this segment, Jason. That's why we start with you, because that is a hard and fast rule, is you can't provide a that bites moment while in the that bites segment. Well, Jason, that was you last week.
We all know I can't read. That's what bites. Coming up next, why Daniel Snyder's motivation to change the team name might go beyond FedEx's statement. Go look and wing up.
That bites.
Oh.
You can feel it just slipping away in those moments. Because once you make one mistake, you know we're all looking for it.
You know, sometimes I hear myself and I wonder how they ever let me host OTL. Okay, Junior, it's funny. I'm not the only one who can't speak very well. Listen to you try to use the English language and leaving everyone confused.
Mina Kimes with us here on Golic and Wina. Mina, Golic and Wingo. Golic and Wina. I don't
know. So it's Golic and Wingo. I'm Jason. She's Mina. You're Mike.
I'm not a great talker. I am my father's son, if nothing else, on this program.
That bites.
I helped you get through it. I'm here to help you.
Wina. It's. I don't even like the way that sounds. Terrifying. All right. Stop making this about us. Let's make it about the important thing in the world. Fight Island. We got a chance to talk to Ariel Helwani about the upcoming fight between Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman this weekend. Well, Ariel had a chance to talk to Masvidal, and Masvidal was very descriptive in what he was going to do to the Nigerian Nightmare.
How do you see it playing out? Could you give us a preview? How do you see it actually going down?
Me baptizing his ass in front of the whole world.
So you think you knock him out?
Cold blooded as can be. His body's grasping for air. I got my hand raised over him. Just going to baptize him, man, for the world to see. It's going to be violent.
Early or late?
It's going to start violent. It's going to end violent. I don't know, first round, fifth round. I don't know, but it's gonna, just like I said in the Nate and the Till and the Ashken fight and every fight I've ever been a part of, I'm going to give it everything I have in my being to leave this guy unconscious and for a long time. Now, I don't like to just touch that little button and then they go to sleep and then they wake up and they're like trying to wrestle with the referee. No, no, no. You know me, I like to hold that button down. I want to make sure that when you come back to this world, you're spaced out. You're in an ambulance headed somewhere and your cornerman got to tell you what happened because you got no recollection of it. And especially with a guy like Usman, I wouldn't mind if the referee trips on the way to stopping me and I get in a couple extra shots.
That bites.
I feel like that's what you say about me before I come in on Friday mornings.
He's treating the button that knocks a person unconscious like it's the turbo button in NBA 2K. I don't want to just tap it. I want to hold it down the whole time and dribble around everybody.
Okay, that was fun. And it was nice, but I'd like to get back to making fun of you. Your dad, Mike Golic Sr., is a legend. He loves to embarrass you. He's done a lot over the years, but my favorite's when he makes you uncomfortable while having the sex talk with you on the program.
You ever been in a college football training room and had the porn bed music playing while your dad talks about doing the hibbity-dibbity in front of all your teammates and the people that you go to work with in college every day?
How did that work out?
You ever had that as a part of your life, Trey?
How did that work out?
Not great. You ever had a weightlifting accident that involved, you know, your you-know-what and had that broadcast on air the next day? You ever had that, Trey?
No.
Nah, welcome
That's to... That's why I don't lift weights.
Mike, I feel bad for you, buddy. Like, you need a socially distanced hug. Like, your dad's been very transparent about some of your... issues.
Well, yeah, like some of my issues, but literally it is the flow chart of my dad is like peak America's dad joke purveyor, and he will never miss an opportunity if there is a free bit of time in the day that he comes up with in a story, and my mom might be around for that. Rest assured, he's gonna make a sex joke. Like, it is the next line on the flow chart there. He is obligated by dad law to do so, and he always makes sure that he does. All right, ending on a high note here, all I gotta say for this clip is L. Duncan, Knock If You Buck, weddings, and table salads. Let's go.
Before we sat down and ate dinner and did the whole, you know, all the histrionics with the speeches and stuff, I wanted everyone to know what was coming after dinner. And so he goes right to Wicked, and I'm like, all right, so everybody loses it. And then he just immediately goes, Knock If You Buck. And I looked at him, and he was like, he just started smiling and nodding his head. And there's a video, I have to find it, that a friend took. And all you see is me in my wedding dress, and I spike, just like this. I spike my veil to the, yo, like I spiked it. I was like, we're done. It was already like a mosh pit 10 minutes into my wedding, and it was incredible. It got to a point where my wedding planner comes over, and she's like, Elle, they want to serve salads, but no one will sit down. Can you please tell the DJ to stop? We didn't eat till 10:45. It was ridiculous.
That bites.
I still can't get over the image of this little like wedding planner on the side that's like, but you wanted the ranch and the blue cheese. I mean, it's all about
half of them didn't even mark chicken or steak on the RSVP. The arugula is getting cold. I don't know what to do in this situation. All because Knock If You Buck is a force of nature.
My world has been shattered by this, by the way, and it has inspired some of what you've been doing on social media. We've been asking people to send us their moment from their wedding, their whatever that hype song is, where you know everything is just it's there, like and everything takes a higher level. Your Knock If You Buck moment, if you will.
A guy tweeted into me and said his wife got up on stage and rapped at their wedding and directly told both sets of their parents, don't hold your breath on grandkids right now. Like, that is a weird version of combining the sex talk idea and this wedding notion all into one ball of discomfort for everyone attending.
At least it wasn't the rehearsal dinner for that talk. You know, that's the only thing you can say there that tries to make it easier. That's that bite. I'd like to say, though, nothing from this week. We've been... We've been flawless together the last several days, apparently, because we finally didn't make the cut.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.